Llegaron los Propane Days a Lowe's. Desde ahora hasta el 16 de junio, los miembros MVPs de Lowe's reciben un 20% de reembolso en pintura con una tarjeta de regalo electrónica de Lowe's por compras de pinturas elegibles de $100 o más. Lleva la nueva y exclusiva pintura HGTV Home de Sherwin-Williams SpecRite para interiores. Lowe's sabe de pros. Aplican exclusiones, restricciones y más términos. Visita Lowe's.com/L/Pro Loyalty Terms. Sujeto a cambios.
Lots to talk about here on Friday on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We're going to go over all the Steelers free agency moves, guys that are gone, guys that are coming in, what's the difference, and what is Omar Khan's big plan. Plus, a preview of Pitt, Iowa State, the Panthers' chance at winning in the round of 64 after their dramatic win on Tuesday. All that and more right here on the show. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, joined by Ray Fittipaldi. We are both of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And we are talking here about a lot of different things. We're going to start talking about the Steelers. We'll get to my conversation with Noah Hyles in the third segment, talking Pitt Panthers and Pitt basketball with their appearance in the NCAA tournament. They won on Tuesday against Mississippi State in Dayton, Ohio. We drove down here. I'm currently in Greensboro, North Carolina. We will get to that, previewing that matchup with Iowa State, the sixth seed team in the bracket. But Ray Fittipaldi, Ray, you have been quite busy yourself because the Steelers have been making lots of moves in free agency. We've now seen Miles Jack got cut. They brought in Landon Roberts and Cole Holcomb. Robert Spillane is with the Raiders. Cameron Sutton's with the Lions. But Patrick Peterson has been brought in at cornerback in free agency. And they were also one got Nate Herbig, the offensive lineman from the New York Jets and formerly the Philadelphia Eagles. There's been a lot of moves made here. And I think, you know, we didn't get a chance to break these down, you know, piece by piece as they were happening on this show, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on, do you feel like this is a different pace of how things are happening from Omar Khan to the years that you covered Kevin Colbert, or is this kind of just we're seeing some different things because the Steelers aren't paying for a franchise quarterback right now?
Yeah, I mean, Chris, I would probably tend to think the latter. I think Omar Khan is going to be aggressive as long as he has the salary cap space. I mean, listen, Kevin Colbert tried to address inside linebacker the last couple of years, last 5 years, really. They didn't have any luck. We'll see if Omar Khan and his new scouting staff, were able to get this right this time. To me, obviously the big headline of the week is probably Patrick Peterson, but when you look at what they're trying to do at inside linebacker, not just bringing in one guy and cutting one guy this year. It's like, okay, we're revamping the whole thing. Like this, what we've been doing hasn't worked, and now we're going to try something completely different. So in comes Cole Holcomb, formerly of the Commanders, and also in comes Landon Roberts, formerly of the Patriots and the Dolphins. Just looking at it, I think – Holcomb is probably that three-down linebacker that they were looking for. He signed for $18 million over 3 years. Roberts got just a two-year deal. I think he's probably, going to slot into that two-down linebacker role. So we'll see how it unfolds. They haven't had much luck lately. But, news-wise, in terms of the way the Steelers are going to look on the field in 2023, I think the big news this week was inside linebacker.
It certainly looks that way. I mean, and it's a, like I said, it's almost a clean sweep. Mark Robinson being the only guy really remaining there at this point. Do you see this as because of the lack of ability to produce turnovers? Because we've been talking about how this is a team that they want to create more turnovers. Patrick Peterson, that's kind of his thing. Minkah Fitzpatrick, that's kind of his thing. Devontae KZ, that's kind of his thing. T.J. Watt, when he's healthy, is doing that. The linebackers, the off-ball linebackers, Devin Bush, Miles Jack, Robert Spillane, none of them were able to contribute to the turnover column this year. Is that part of it, or is this more so just a clean sweep because there were other reasons involved there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's twofold. I think, turnovers are always nice. I mean, Ryan Shazier was great at it. He can create turnovers with interceptions, and he was also very good forcing fumbles and just always being around the football. But when I look at this post-Ryan Shazier, you know, if you want to read into it a little bit, and hopefully we'll get to talk to Omar Khan here before the draft in the next couple of weeks about this, but they got bigger. You know, if you go back and look, not so much Jonathan Bostic, but Mark Barron, you know, 220-ish, right? A converted safety who transitioned to linebacker. Devin Bush, a smaller guy. I know he was listed at 230. Chris, I don't know if he ever played at 230. Yeah. Or if he did, he didn't play like he was 230, right?
Right. So
they've had these smaller, I guess you can call them sideline to sideline types of inside linebackers that they've been rolling through here in recent years. And Holcomb is he's listed at 240. Roberts, right about the same area. So I think they got a little bit heavier. Obviously, you still got to cover. But to me, this was, okay, we're shoring up our run defense. We're not going to watch smaller linebackers get pushed around anymore. Even when there were injuries in the years past, you know, they tried to convert Marcus Allen to a linebacker, another guy. So I think they've come to the conclusion that that hasn't worked for them, and now they're trying to, I don't know, you could say turn back the clock. It's still a passing league, but it seems like, you know, with these moves and with the guys that they've cycled out of here, it does seem like that they're trying to get a little bit more, a little bit heavier in their approach to the way they stop the run and to the way they play defense.
Would you say that linebacker would be very still be very much in play in the NFL draft with these moves?
I think so. You know, I think right now you got three. You know, Mark Robinson is still very inexperienced. I don't know if you still want to call him a project because he came on late last season, but he's inexperienced. And I don't know that you can go into the 2023 season counting on him as your number one top backup. So, yeah, I mean, I think you know, I don't think it's going to be early now, given the money they've spent in free agency, but I could see them taking a guy if there's value there, say, probably anytime 49 or after, Chris, but I'm even thinking probably 80 or after now. Get a guy that you like, develop him, but, you know, you're set. You know, Holcomb presumably is here for 3 years, if not three, definitely two. Roberts here for at least 1 year, maybe two. I mean, they don't have to rush into anything and draft anyone high. And that really, when you look at it, I think every team in the NFL kind of came to the same conclusion this spring, right? You look at this off-ball draft class, it's not great. You look at some of the first players who were off the board in free agency. TJ Edwards was one of the first signings on Monday, and things started flowing pretty quickly after that. So I don't think this is a great class, and I don't think teams wanted to be reaching for inside linebackers, and I think what the Steelers did and what the rest of the NFL did speaks to that.
Certainly. I also want to ask, we'll get to in the next segment, what the next move is for the Steelers, because they've restructured some deals, they've opened up some cap space to make room for these deals, but I think a lot of fans are wondering, is there another move that Omar Khan's planning? Because this feels kind of refreshing to a lot of fans, as they've expressed on social media, like, wow, this is a little bit more aggressive. And I want to get your insights on that in just a minute here on the North Shore Drive podcast. But first, we got to talk to you guys about Yinz's in the Berg. Yinz's in the Berg, of course, is the number one place to get all your Pittsburgh sports apparel. And this just in, you can go to two of their stores in the Strip District, two of them, where you can check out all their merchandise. If you're a Pitt fan, a Steelers fan, a Pirates fan, a Penguins fan, if you're a fan of all of them, you're in luck. They're going to have all the merch that you want to support your team or to get gear for your friends and family. And if you can't make it to the Strip District, guess what? They got they have a website that you can go to, yinzerspgh.com. Go to yinzerspgh.com right now, and you'll be able to get all of the gear that you want, and they're updating merchandise weekly there. So go to yinzerspgh.com or either of their two stores in the Strip District to get all that you can from Yinz's in the Berg, the number one place to get all your Pittsburgh sports apparel, accessories, and much, much more. Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast, I'm Chris Carter, He's Ray Fittipaldi. We're of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and I want to keep talking to Ray about the Steelers for a little bit here. Now, Ray, there's a report that came out that the Steelers were, quote-unquote, in on getting Orlando Brown before he signed with the Cincinnati Bengals. Of course, Orlando Brown, a multiple Pro Bowl left tackle, a guy who's played for the Chiefs and the Ravens, a guy who's a Super Bowl ring now, and they paid him, I think, 4 years, $64 million, something along those lines. And so that report, you know, could read a few different ways. And the way I look at it, it could read, A, the Steelers kind of just kicked the tires, just checked in and say, hey, how much is this guy? Whoa, okay, we're not paying that. Or B, they made a legit bid that wasn't as much as 4 years for $64 million, but wanted a legitimate chance to add Orlando Brown to their offensive line. Which way do you feel that that report might be leading as far as the truth to it? And if they didn't get him, do you think that there's still a big free agency play out there that Omar Khan is trying to maneuver to get?
Well, I mean, I think Orlando Brown was probably the biggest name who was out there at that point, and I haven't taken a look at the list of the remaining free agent tackles. But, Chris, I mean, at this point, you know, what are we now, 5 days into free agency? I don't know that there's anyone who would be better than Dan Moore at this point. You know, it's interesting. You know, Brown is, I think he's a good player, but there's some debate in the NFL about whether he's a right or a left tackle. And, you know, there are teams out there that said, we're not going to pay you left tackle money because we don't think that you can play there, or we don't think you could be an elite left tackle. So would Orlando Brown have been an upgrade over Dan Moore? I tend to think so. Yeah, absolutely. But I think the Steelers probably had a price in mind that they were willing to pay for that, and that price wasn't $16 million a year. And I think the Bengals, did I read, they guaranteed him $31 million.
I believe that is correct, yes.
Up front in that deal. And that just, you know, I don't know the details of, you know, what the Steelers' interest was, but obviously we could read into that they didn't feel that good about him for that price. So, you know, it's interesting, Chris. You know, they took care of center, right guard, and right tackle last season. Potentially on Tuesday with the signing of Nate Herbig, at the very least there, they created competition at left guard for Kevin Dotson.
I agree.
If not, I think they might even have him slated as a starter. We'll see how that plays out. They guaranteed him $4 million. He's a guy who started 28 games in the NFL. I don't know that they brought him in here to be a backup, but we'll see. You know, we'll see. He got on the field in Philadelphia and with the Jets because of injuries. And, you know, we'll see exactly what the Steelers have in mind for him. But they obviously felt like Kevin Dotson needed more competition. And I think it's obvious. I think Dan Moore needs more competition, too. Now, that could have come in the form of a free agent signing with Orlando Brown. That didn't happen. But now there's another step in this process, as you well know. And that competition very well could be coming in the NFL draft.
And that could very well come in the NFL draft. Mike Tomlin, of course, going around and visiting pro days, as is Pat Meyer. I think Pat Meyer was seen at Peter Skoronski's pro day with Northwestern. Mike Tomlin, along with most of the Steelers, like heavy brass, they've been seen, I believe, at Clemson's pro day. They saw at Georgia's pro day where they got to see Broderick Jones. All right. So the Steelers are going to do their due diligence. They're going to go around. They're going to see who they have to following up with all these players, kind of just continuing to build the profiles of these guys until they're put together their final draft board when Andy Weidel's kind of ranking everyone out there. I think it's very interesting, and there are some guys that are still out there at the offensive tackle. You know, Caleb McGarry is available. Isaiah Wynn. You know, a lot of people talk about Taylor Lewan, but I think that his injury history kind of precludes him from being in that conversation. But I think that you're right. Draft pick might be the move here at this point, because if you're the Steelers, you know, maybe you sign, you know, a lesser expensive offensive tackle for depth, just because you want to add that to the ranks there. But then you say, hey, first two rounds, you got three picks, get an offensive tackle somewhere in that mix, because there will be guys of that value somewhere where you're picking. And I do think
Llegaron los Propane Days a Lowe's. Desde ahora hasta el 16 de junio, los miembros MVPs de Lowe's reciben un 20% de reembolso en pintura con una tarjeta de regalo electrónica de Lowe's por compras de pinturas elegibles de $100 o más. Lleva la nueva y exclusiva pintura HGTV Home de Sherwin-Williams SpecRite para interiores. Lowe's sabe de pros. Aplican exclusiones, restricciones y más términos. Visita Lowe's.com/L/Pro Loyalty Terms. Sujeto a cambios.
That could be interesting there. I look at this, and you know, whenever I've seen Kevin Colbert, I follow the pattern of free agency is usually just his path to shore up the roster so that there's no glaring weakness and they don't have to pick one position in the first round. Do you feel like they've done that, or do you think there's more work they have to do to kind of make sure that this roster is even keel heading into the NFL draft?
You know, some smaller moves. I think a backup to TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith would certainly make sense here in the second and third wave of free agency before the draft. And listen, if it doesn't happen, they've waited until June and July to get those guys in the past. Melvin Ingram came in July, right? So, I mean, it's not a do-or-die situation where if you feel like, let's just throw it out there, let's say Bud Dupree wants X amount and you're not willing to pay him, you know, you could do that in June or July and still get somebody. Maybe somebody's a cap casualty. I mean, maybe something happens. Hey, maybe you even wait until September, until final cut times, till you get that guy. You know, they've done that in the past. It hasn't worked great for them in the past, but that certainly would be an option. And then one other position that I think, I don't even want to say if it has to be upgraded, but number three receiver, right? I mean, you know, you probably want to provide some more competition for Calvin Austin, given that he's coming off a season that he finished on IR. And then the same thing for Anthony Miller. I know they like him. They brought him in here for a reason. They kept him on IR for a reason instead of waiving him injured because they think he's got some talent. But you do want to safeguard yourself and probably bring somebody else in, you know, for a little bit more competition at that spot. I think, you know, obviously they're set with Deontay Johnson and George Pickens at 1-2, but, you know, number three, I think that's a big question mark. So you could do that in the draft, yes, but also you could do that in free agency, whether that's in March or April, or again, whether that's in June or July as well.
Would you also put tight end on this list, considering Zach Gentry is in the free agency market? They could bring him back and just make it simple and kind of keep the same crew. Or do they go sign somebody? Because also, as we've talked about on this show, this is a very good tight end class. And some people even say it could be the best position class in this NFL draft year. So is tight end another position that you think Omar Khan is probably scouting out right now as far as guys out there? And unsigned guys at this point include guys like Mike Gesicki, Dalton Schultz, Austin Hooper, Foster Moreau, and Irv Smith Jr. I think at least at the list that I'm looking at here, I know that this list has Robert Tonyan as free agent, but he's been signed to the Bears. I know that much. But is tight end another position you see Omar Khan getting aggressive with here and maybe in the next week or so?
Yeah, so Gesicki signed Friday morning with the Patriots. That's one thing. And I think you mentioned Caleb McGarry. I think he re-upped with the Falcons too.
Okay, so those two are off the board here.
Okay. Yeah, so that might happen yesterday. But, yeah, I mean, you know, tight end, it's interesting, Chris. I mean, you look at it, Zach Gentry could be one of those guys who's out there still in April. And if the Steelers, people talking about the depth of this tight end class, you know, you can go into it third, fourth round and maybe get a dude. And if you get a dude who could walk in here and be your blocking tight end and be your next Zach Gentry, then there wouldn't be a need to re-sign Zach Gentry. But listen, if you don't have that luck in the draft, then maybe you could, you know, revisit Zach Gentry again early May if he is still out there. So you look at him, I mean, he played 50% of the snaps last year. It's a big part of that offense. They just might be in the mode now, okay, hey, this tight end class is stacked. We can maybe get a better version of Zach Gentry, maybe with someone with a little bit more juice in the passing game too, and that might be how they're approaching this.
I think it'd be very interesting to see how they do approach this, because there's a lot of people I think that would be very happy with some of the tight ends that are in this class. Darnell Washington, Michael Meyer, Dalton Kincaid, a lot of guys out there that they could get. And like you said, even some of the later rounds, it'd be acceptable to kind of add to the position, especially considering Pat Freiermuth is already on the roster. And Connor Hayward, I think, did have a good rookie season for a sixth-round draft pick. But as we were talking about before, last thing, Ray, I think the Steelers, they've set themselves up with a lot of answers that they have, and they could still get some more, and they probably will get some more in free agency. But with that being stated, do you think the Steelers' priorities in the first round with that 17th overall pick have changed at all, or are they still very much the same with cornerback, offensive tackle, defensive line all being on the table, especially because Larry Ogunjobi got signed to a three-year deal?
I think everything remains status quo. I think cornerback – you can make an argument the cornerback might be the biggest need now, but they're not going to force anything if those top three aren't there, I don't think. Or if they don't, you know, if they don't love a fourth guy that maybe isn't in that top 20 range yet that we don't know about, that they're not going to force the issue. But Patrick Peterson basically is going to be a one-year rental. I know he signed a two-year deal, but the way that contract is structured, he's here for 1 year. And then Levi Wallace and Akella Witherspoon are also here for one more year. So it's they got to find a cornerback in this draft, but I don't necessarily think that it has to be at 17. I think you can get, a starter or starters if they want to double down, second round and on too. So cornerback remains a top three need, but you're right. Offensive line, offensive tackle specifically would be two. And then I think 2A defensive line, you still got to find a defensive lineman to learn behind Larry Ogunjobi and Cam Hayward. Larry O is 29 years old. Cam Hayward is going to be 34. They play well. Cam Hayward shows no signs of slowing down. But, Chris, as you know, when you get into your mid-30s, that's when the injuries and that's when your play tails to tend off play tends to tail off a little bit. So I'm sure the Steelers are keeping their fingers crossed that that won't happen this year with Hayward. But, if it does, I think they have to be prepared to have a younger guy in place who can learn behind those guys and sort of be mentored by two really, really good football players in those two.
I think that's certainly the position the Steelers want to be in, is that they want to have, especially defensive line, cornerback. I think they've aligned themselves with veterans who can kind of set the tone and be able to teach a young guy who comes into the room. And that also includes, I'd say, linebacker. Even though there's going to be two new guys at the head of the linebacker room, they're both veterans who can kind of help a rookie get adjusted there. That's a lot of what Omar Khan's doing. We'll see what else happens there as free agency continues to move forward. Lots of moves still to be made out there. We'll keep you updated with them all here on the North Shore Drive podcast. But we've got to switch topics, talk to Noah Hiles, my friend here in Greensboro, North Carolina, with me as Pitt gets ready to take on Iowa State. It's going to be a big matchup on Friday, 3:10 p.m. We'll talk about all that and more right here in a minute. Stay tuned right here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We have our first ever in-person dual show here.
Is this history?
This is history.
Oh,
right,
man,
here.
I'm glad to make history with you, pal.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Look at this,
that.
We can like touch each other, like it's in person.
Yeah, it's not like we're reaching through a screen, but
people listening on the podcast have no idea what's happening.
They have no idea what's going on right now, but we're in person here. I'm Chris Carter, Noah Hiles, we're your Pitt beat writers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We spent the last two segments talking Steelers with all the craziness that's happened in free agency, but March Madness is here. Pitt has already experienced some madness, winning with a late shot from Jamarius Burton. That got them to the round of 64. Now they play Iowa State. And Noah, this is a matchup that we talked about, and I really think this is that there, if there were any six seed to draw Iowa State's way of they play defense, I think that Pitt can hang with this team.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think it's a much different look than what we saw Tuesday from Mississippi State. It's a team that loves to win through defense. It's a team that kind of muddies the waters, mucks it up, as they like to say. And you look at the defensive metrics, which are very favorable for the Cyclones, and it's because they play such a different style of basketball compared to pretty much every other team in the Big 12. And it's such a kind of like a shock, yeah. I think, to all those talented teams. And to their credit, they did well enough to get a sixth seed in the NCAA tournament. However, I think Pitt has beat better teams. I think Pitt has had even success in losses against better teams. I don't think this is a matchup that should worry Pitt fans a ton. I mean, it's March. No game is easy. But this is not the tallest task this group has faced this year.
When you look at their numbers, and you said their metrics measure out well, Iowa State gives up the fewest points in the Big 12, and that's a very tough conference that looks at. But when you look at their allowed 2-point and 3-point percentage shooting, it's not that great. And in fact, Pitt is better in both of those metrics when you look at those stats there. And when we were talking to the players at the podium, Greg Elliott noted, he's like, they remind me of Florida State, just with not as much length. Florida State, another team that didn't have good numbers as far as stopping shooting across the board, but on their day, they could challenge your shots and give you a hard time. Pitt has to be ready for them to bring out their style of basketball and to try to keep themselves playing their pace. We saw Mississippi State force Pitt to play their pace, and Pitt survived. They do not want to live on that life, though.
Yeah, you don't want to see a repeat of the second half from Tuesday. You, if you're Pitt, you've got to find a way. You have to assume this team's going to pressure you at half court. It's not going to allow you to have any spacing once you cross that timeline, not going to allow easy passes around the arc that can create open opportunities from three-point range. That's how the Panthers are able to really beat teams that they're better than or not better than, I should say. And that's when Pitt's offense is at its best. And when teams can really prevent that ball movement, they can take away those looks from the outside, Pitt's at a severe disadvantage. I expect that to be the game plan for 40 minutes with Iowa State. And they're a team that can do that. I mean, this is not the most talented team they've faced either.
They played the Big 12.
Yes, they faced some of the best guards in the country, some of the best teams in the country. They had a very challenging non-conference schedule, and they're prepared. They're going to come in swinging, but I don't know. There's part of me that also just recognizes that this Pitt team really rises to the challenge more often than not, especially on the big stage. Mm-hmm. So it'll be fun to see how the coaching angle of this goes on each side.
I agree. Pitt has found so many times to close games out in tight situations. They don't seem to blink in those situations. Yeah. You saw with Jamarius Burton's game winner the other night, Tuesday night. But this is also a team, Iowa State. The part of the pace that they play is they are aggressive at attacking you and trying to create turnovers. They had the highest average of turnovers per game. I believe it was 8.81. That's the highest average in the Big 12. Talen Lipsey, a guard who's going to come off the bench for them, he had 70 steals this season.
Yeah.
That was the number two rate in the Big 12. Something to watch out for. Pitt, Jeff Capel always talked about valuing the basketball. But here's the thing. If they are aggressive there, Noah, and I think this could be an advantage that Pitt takes it to, you know, has to attack. We saw in the second half against Mississippi State, how did they score most of the time? It was Nelly driving to the hoop or Nike driving to the hoop. Jamarius Burton, of course, was in foul trouble. This is a game where if they use that defense on you, they don't have the bigs like Tolu Smith and the guys that Mississippi State had. Those guys need to stay out of foul trouble and keep Blake Henson and keep Greg Elliott on the outside. But Nike, Jamarius, and Nelly as a trio, attack the basket. Whether or not Federico plays, we don't know officially. I don't think he will. I think he's still recovering a little bit. He said he's feeling better but wouldn't give us a final sign. But even if he is, attack the basket. If they're being aggressive, that means paint and space is open. You got guys that can drive.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's something Pitt's had to its advantage all year, are two guards that are really tall and physically, you know, better. You know, as far as size goes, and they're tough mismatches with Nike and JB. And then Blake Henson, who is not a guard, but he can play like a guard.
Right.
And we've seen I think Blake probably settles for too much from the outside. I would like to see him use his size a lot more in this matchup. I think he's going to play with a little bit extra fire, too, according to some of the stuff.
Why is that?
Because this was his former team. He never played a game at Iowa State, but he spent the last 2 years there. A lot of questions were thrown his way this afternoon as we're recording on Thursday, just asking what it's going to be like for him to play against the Cyclones. And he didn't have much to say. He said he doesn't keep in contact with anyone from that team, and he's just ready to go out there and try to win. So I think he's going to be playing with some extra fire and motivation, which should be fun for fans to watch. Another guy I have my eye on, aside from the names we mentioned, though, is Nelly Cummings, who I thought was fantastic Tuesday. The team's leading scorer, and he finds a way to get to the basket, too, despite, you know, him not having that size advantage. And you just look at how important this game is for him, where it's not only the ability to find a way to score and move the ball with that half court press they'll probably see, but it's limiting those turnovers. And Nelly's gone up against some tough defensive matchups. He's faced Judah Mintz. He's faced Bleakman. Yeah, is his name Bleakman, the yeah. Bleakman? Yeah, from Virginia, the ACC Defensive Player of the Year, K.A. Clark. However many guards Leaky you want to name from Miami, Leaky Black. Yeah, there's plenty. So he's faced some size mismatches before, but I think he's really going to be tested. And if he can have a big game, that will be a huge boost for the Panthers.
Prediction, Noah.
Oh, man.
Put you on the spot.
2-0, Pitt.
2-0. It's going to score early. They're just going to hold
the ball. No, there's going to be a technical foul and quadruple overtime. And Aiden Fish is going to make both foul shots.
Aiden Fish.
Yep.
2-0.
Yep, that's my prediction.
I have it being 66-62, Pitt comes out on top. I think that the Panthers, again, they got that. I said when they drew these matchups, I said Mississippi State, looking at the way that they play, they can bang with that team. They would need some luck, and they got some, and they won that game. Iowa State, very similar ilk. They play defense a little differently, but they fight the same way. I think these are two teams that Pitt is built to beat in the tournament, and why I said that this team could be dangerous if they were able to make the dance. We'll see if that's the case. 3:10 p.m. Eastern Time here in Greensboro, North Carolina. We're here at our Airbnb as we're chilling on Thursday. We're not chilling. We're working really hard. We got some great stuff, content coming out on you. You can check out all that content at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette or post-gazette.com. From Chris Carter, Noah Hiles, happy Friday, everyone. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone who celebrates. And we hope that you Pitt fans are checking out all of our content because we're going to have all the game coverage. You can check out our Twitter accounts. You can check out the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And especially after the game, we'll be breaking everything down. And who knows? If the Panthers are going to the round of 32, we'll be breaking down who they'll be facing there, all right here on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. From Chris Carter, Noah Hiles, and the North Shore Drive Podcast, thanks for checking us out. This show will be back Monday. But remember, all daily content coming from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and especially on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoyed it. Subscribe to this channel for all of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's video content. Again, back Monday with more North Shore Drive Podcasts.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive Podcast of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you're watching this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our YouTube channel. For 6 months of digital access to post-gazette.com for just $6, click the link down below in the description.
Llegaron los Propane Days a Lowe's. Desde ahora hasta el 16 de junio, los miembros MVPs de Lowe's reciben un 20% de reembolso en pintura con una tarjeta de regalo electrónica de Lowe's por compras de pinturas elegibles de $100 o más. Lleva la nueva y exclusiva pintura HGTV Home de Sherwin-Williams SpecRite para interiores. Lowe's sabe de pros. Aplican exclusiones, restricciones y más términos. Visita Lowe's.com/L/Pro Loyalty Terms. Sujeto a cambios.